everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on iatrogenic disease when we come back. You know, the income tax and Social Security programs are not compatible with our traditional American values, and that's because these two programs encompass the second and the eighth planks to the Communist Manifesto. That's a foreign and alien ideology. Traditional American values were rooted in individual responsibility in place of Social Security and tithing in place of the income tax. Now, these foreign and alien ideologies require of us that we violate three of the Ten Commandments and eight statutes of the Old Covenant. We covet our neighbor's property, and we call that income redistribution. We steal from our neighbors with unjust weights and measures. We call those Federal Reserve notes. And then we practice idolatry by signing contracts with these foreign and alien gods that we call government. And we're not getting away with our crimes either. We're now paying up to 75% of everything that we create and produce in taxes. We live in mortgaged homes owned by the savings and loan companies. We drive cars, but they're owned by GMAC or Ford Motor Finance. The average family of four has a $70,000 consumer debt. We owe a $7 trillion national debt. We Americans are surety for another $44 trillion of unfunded government obligations. And then our financial institutions are leveraged out to $60 trillion worldwide. And our Social Security retirement system is a chain letter Ponzi scheme. We live from paycheck to paycheck. And then we're taught to call all of this prosperity. Well, the God of Israel gave us a better way of life than that, and our founding fathers followed that better way in Article 1, Section 10 of our Constitution when they said, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt." Now, if you'd like to learn more about tax and status and a better way of life, why don't you call and order my 4-hour compact disc package. It's educational, it's entertaining, informative, and best of all, it's free of charge. And you can call and order yours right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. If you're online, you can go to the website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send an email request. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about iatrogenic disease. One of the iatrogenic diseases in the eight categories that we have covered so far isn't even in the categories, and it's called vaccination. Nobody measures how many people are injured by doctors and healthcare professionals through vaccinations. Does anybody ever care? Well, the truth of the matter is, it doesn't kill very many people. It's only about 1 in 1,000. 1 in 1,000. But 49 million children are vaccinated every year. So if you take 49 million and divide that by 1,000, that's 49,000 children that die every year in the United States from vaccines. Did you know that? Hey, boys and girls, that's a bunch. Not quite as many as died in Vietnam over 10 years, but getting close to that number. And this is another one of the dirty little secrets that nobody talks about. And then there's the injuries that come about from vaccines. I don't know which is worse, having a child that died or a child that is totally turned into a vegetable for the rest of their lives, like autism. You know, out in California, they passed some legislation recently, within the last few years, and they banned the use of thimerosal in the vaccines. And the incidence of autism has dropped dramatically. It has dropped dramatically. Now, of course, the medical profession has denied that thimerosal has anything whatsoever to do with autism. And if you don't have a double-blind study and you don't have 15 panels, 16 committees, and 300 paid professionals with PhDs to find that it does cause autism, then it can't be true. I'm just an old country boy, but as an old country boy, I look at that and I say, you know, that pretty much convinces me that thimerosal in the vaccines is what's causing the autism. You see, they didn't ban vaccines. They didn't ban vaccinations out there in California. Just the thimerosal that's in the vaccine. So you're still giving the kid the same snake venom and monkey pus that you were giving them in the past. But you took out this toxic chemical compound, this heavy metal called mercury. Geez, I wonder if it has anything to do with other symptoms, you know, like ADHD or ADHD or whatever they call that kid running around the classroom, that they got to calm him down with Ritalin, you got to drug him. Used to be when you had a kid running around the classroom, you slapped him up alongside the head, kicked him in the ass, and sat him down in his chair, and that'd cure him. Unless he was brain dead, of course, to start with, and then, of course, he might jump up and run around a second time. But I went to the public schools, and in the public schools that I went to, you know, when I was a little kid, they didn't hesitate. I mean, they'd just grab you, shake you until your teeth rattled, slap you up alongside the head, set you down in your chair, and tell you to sit down, shut up, and fold your hands. I didn't seem to have much problem today. If you did that, they'd have you locked up in the penitentiary for 20 years. And so your public schools are out of control, and they're out of control, and so they recommend, well, let's drug these little zombies over here so that they don't cause us any problem. And so that's what they've got, drugged up zombies in the public schools in order to keep them under control. Now, iatrogenic disease, remember, is caused by doctors. It's the healthcare professionals. It's the guys that are over here telling you that we're trying to save your life, and if it weren't for vaccines, the human race would have become extinct by 1946. Fortunately, because of vaccines, we have survived disease, and now we are in the millennium. Well, that's what they tell us. That's what the drug companies are advertising. Now, from the Wall Street Journal, dated Friday, October the 12th, 2001, worries about safety of its anthrax vaccine put the army in a bind. Soldiers were ordered inoculated against a biological threat claim and produced harsh side effects. But soon after this first inoculation in February, a 29-year-old Mr. Netupsky showed up at an urgent care facility with sores all over his mouth and throat. The side of my tongue was all raw with little canker sores, and bloody mucus was coming out of my nose. His malady's ultimately diagnosed as an autoimmune disorder in which his body accidentally attacked itself, grew worse as he got the next two installments of the six-shot regime. Mr. Netupsky and several of the doctors who have examined him believe the anthrax vaccine caused his severe reaction and may also be to blame for the blood clots that Mr. Netupsky experienced in his legs months later. All right. Now, when you read a story like that, we're just talking about one guy. It is, in our minds, just one event. And it's something that's inconsequential, and it's an anomaly. It's a maverick. It's just one in a million that happens to. Is it one in a million, or is it one in 100,000? Or is it one in 1,000, or is it one in 100? You know, I can personally tell you that I've read at least 10 stories about this anthrax vaccine that was given to soldiers. It got to a point where some soldiers just absolutely said, "I ain't taking that crap," and they were discharged from the Army. Some of them were court-martialed, maybe some of them even went to jail, I don't know, but they'd court-martial them. There was a woman in the military. She got her shots and she got sick and had to be discharged. Then there was a major in the Air Force and he refused, and I don't know what they did with him. See, you read these stories, but you never see the outcomes. Did you ever notice that? You get the story and then you never hear about the outcome of it. And so we forget about it. The media, the news media, they put the kibosh on it. They shut that up. They shut it down. We're not supposed to know that. Now, of course, we used to laugh at the Russians and their controlled media, but today we have the same thing going on in America, and we don't recognize it here any more than the Russians recognized it under Joe Stalin. You pick up your newspaper and you believe what you see in print. And you're told what you need to know. And what you don't need to know, you're not told. And what you're not supposed to know, you're not told. Now, I don't know what the iatrogenic results of anthrax vaccine is, but there's more to the story than that. Now, I did a series of programs on vaccines and vaccinations. Just go to our archives and I'll tell you that story. That's another story for another day. But it's a bunch. And nobody actually knows how many, but one thing we do know, that of the adverse reactions that come from vaccines, less than 10% of those events are reported. And that fits in with just exactly what we're talking about with iatrogenic disease, because the panels that were researching iatrogenic disease discovered the same phenomena, that only about 5 to 20% of the events were ever reported. That in order to find out about these iatrogenic events, they had to go back to the medical records and then analyze those medical records. In some cases, it's tens of thousands of medical records that they went through. And then they would take a look at, well, here's what the doctor said the guy died from, but based upon the medical records, here's what he actually died of. And what he actually died of had to be ascertained by an autopsy. And so they took a look at the medical records, they took a look at the autopsies, and they put the story together. And boy, it's a sordid story. If they ever did the same thing with vaccines, I think that the number of people who are dying from vaccines would be truly astounding. I think we'd be shocked beyond belief, and especially since they're doing it to our children. Now, here's another factor. If you get a flu shot, you know, they recommend that you get a flu shot every year. Well, if you get a flu shot 5 years in succession, or it doesn't even have to be in succession, in a 10-year period, if you get 5 flu shots in any combination every other year, 3 in a row, then you don't get any, and then you get 2, and then no more, any combination, 5 flu shots in a 10-year span, you increase your risk of Alzheimer's disease by 1,000%. That's 10 times. 10 times more likely that you're going to get Alzheimer's. Now, remember, those flu shots contain what? Thimerosal. See, I think that you could probably ingest the snake venom and monkey pus and the chemicals that are in the vaccine and probably survive it. But the buildup of that mercury in your body, it affects you neurologically. And after all, that's what autism is all about. It's a neurological problem. Now, here's another story. Here's what every parent should know before their children are vaccinated. And why are a growing number of parents and healthcare professionals around the world questioning vaccination? Well, the controversy stems from the thousands of deaths and prominent disabilities attributed to vaccination every year, as well as the many published medical studies, government statistics, congressional testimonies, and other credible sources that directly contradict the commonly held assumptions about the safety of vaccine and its effectiveness. More pictures of vaccine damage children are available to view at the CDC website. So if you go to the Center for Disease Control and then you take a look at vaccine damage, They'll show you a lot of pictures that you can get right off the web page. Now, this is from the article, remember, last time I gave you the address. It's www.shirleys-wellness-cafe.com. Shirley's Wellness Cafe.com, with two hyphens between Shirley's Wellness and Cafe. Now, Bart Klassen, a Maryland physician, published data showing that diabetes rates rose significantly in New Zealand following a massive hepatitis B vaccine campaign in young children, and that diabetes rates also went up sharply in Finland after three new childhood vaccines were introduced. In the fall of 1997, two influential professional magazines featured articles asking the question, has the decrease of infectious diseases in childhood through the mass use of vaccines been replaced with an increase in chronic diseases such as diabetes and asthma? Well, The Economist, a prestigious international magazine read by world leaders in government, business, and public policy, and Science News, a magazine read by both healthcare professionals and the general public, explored the reported links between vaccines and chronic diseases in their November 22, 1997 issues. You can learn more about vaccine and diabetes connection, and asthma and vaccine connection, and sudden infant death syndrome and autism and vaccine connection, and the shaken baby syndrome and vaccine connection. 100 years ago, children received one vaccine. It was the smallpox vaccine. 40 years ago, children received five vaccines routinely. They were diphtheria, pertussis, tetanus, polio, and smallpox. And as many as eight shots by age 2 years of age, 40 years ago. Children now receive 52 vaccines in the form of 15 shots by the time they are 6 months of age, and if they receive all of the recommended vaccines and shots, including the Prevnar pediatric pneumonia shot, it totals 52 by age 6 months. Now, you know, most of those shots contain that mercury thimerosal. It's a miracle. It's a wonder to me that all of the little babies don't come down with autism, but evidently only the weakest do. Or with sudden infant death syndrome. I remember a friend of mine, and he and his wife had a baby, and the baby was probably 6 weeks, or maybe it was as old as 6 months. I can't remember now. It was back in 58, but the baby wasn't walking yet. I know that. He was still just a crib baby. Could have been 2 or 3 months old. But anyway, one day his mother walked into the room and the baby was dead. Dead. And they attributed it to SIDS, sudden infant death syndrome. Nobody knows what causes it. Nobody knows how to cure it. Well, over in Japan, they came up with a new plan. They said, here's what we'll do. We won't vaccinate children until they're 2 years old. 2 years. Sudden infant death syndrome dropped by 50%. I came up with a wild plan. I said, stop vaccinating those children altogether, period, and let's see if SIDS just disappears. Period. I know, it's a wild new concept, but seems like to me this whole country boy putting two and two together says it's worth giving it a shot. Congressman is calling for criminal penalties for any government agency that knew about the dangers of thimerosal and vaccines and did nothing to protect American children. Congressman Dan Burton, Republican of Indiana, during congressional hearings said, quote, you mean to tell me that since 1929, You have been using thimerosal, and the only test that you know of is from 1929, and that every one of those people had meningitis, and they all died? For nearly an hour, Burton repeatedly asked the FDA and CDC officials what they knew and when they knew it. Thimerosal contains a related mercury compound called ethyl mercury. Mercury is a toxic metal that can cause immune, sensory, neurological, motor, and behavioral dysfunctions. Notice behavioral dysfunctions. Well, we got another drug for that. It's called Ritalin. So you shoot your kid up with vaccines, and when he develops a behavioral dysfunction, we give him Ritalin and turn him into a zombie. And we do this, boys and girls, to our little children. I suspect that in the judgment, God Almighty is going to ask you parents, where in the hell was your head when you were doing that to your child? Somewhere up the middle of your rectum is the only logical answer that you're going to have to give. Well, let's see what else we've got here. Remember, we were doing this report by www.shirleys-wellness-cafe.com, 36-page report. And they advertise a lot of books in here, you know, like books like What Doctors Don't Tell You, and Medicine, M-E-D-I-S-I-N. I'll just read it to you. Medicine is a fascinating and unique perspective of the unholy practices of allopathic medicine. That's your normal, run-of-the-mill, everyday, garden-variety medical doctor. And the commercialization of devitalized and chemical-based foods. With the compelling facts and informative text, this nearly 400-page volume covers a century of medical applications and the history of refined food. From Pasteur's false germ theory to the hidden dose or hidden cause of obesity, medicine, spelled M-E-D-I-S-I-N, medicine, is also comprised of factual information regarding the miseducation of the healthcare institution and the nutritional dogma perpetrated by commercial food corporations. The book features compelling topics like why the religious faithful are not disease-free, vaccines, or vaccination, the lie of the needle, why cancer is really not under control, Splenda really isn't splendid, fluoride, how America really got brainwashed, and the medicines behind hormone replacement and hysterectomies. Simply put, medicine seeks to give the masses a comprehensive understanding of medicine, disease, and the divine principles of good health. Well, good luck. But from my experience, I would say that telling people about medicine is like casting pearls before swine. The average Joe Sixpack doesn't want to hear it. That's the bottom line to that. But if you're not like the average Joe Sixpack, and this little introduction here kind of interests you, this is a neat book called Medicine, spelled M-E-D-I-S-I-N. I'll just bet you that you could probably get a copy of that book from www.shirleyswellnesscafe.com. If not, I'll bet you they can tell you where to get it. The truth about the drug companies and how they deceive us and what to do about it. I know, it's a wild new book title. It's written by Marcia Angle, M.D., former New England Journal of Medicine. She was the head of the New England Journal of Medicine. She wrote a book called The Truth About the Drug Companies and How They Deceive Us and What to Do About It. Now, there's a whistleblower if I ever heard one. And as I've said many times, and I'll say it again, you know, you and I, the average Joe Sixpacks running around here, the truck drivers and plumbers and carpenters and so on, we're never going to find out what the hell's going on behind the scenes. unless some whistleblower who's behind the scenes comes forward and writes a book or gets on talk radio and says, hey, let me tell you what's going on. I had such a whistleblower here. In fact, I may have him on the air here, and I'll interview him if he comes out here. He's a druggist. That's right, he's a druggist. I mean, he gets right into these drugs right up to his elbows. And he's the guy that makes your prescription for you. And he was here at school one day, and I got to chit-chatting a little bit with him, and I said, well, tell me a little about drugs. And he gave me the skinny on it. He went to medical school, and he says the first day he was in medical school, they said, or drug school, whatever you call it, and he said, the first thing they told us is that all drugs are poison. Let me repeat that. This is a druggist. He said his first day in medical school or drug school, whatever the school that pharmacists go to, the professor stood up and said, you need to understand that to begin with, all drugs are poisons. And our job is to administer these poisons in controlled dosages so as not to harm or kill the patient. So every time you're taking Vioxx or you're taking Anacin or any other kind of drug, it's a poison. Taken in enough volume, it'll kill you. And their job is to reduce the amount that's in the dose so that it doesn't kill or injure you. I thought that was pretty revelatory. And then he went on to tell me how the drug business works and what the profit margins are. God, you'd be amazed at the profit margins. See, most of us out here in the business world, you know, we take an item, we buy a pocket knife, you know, for $3. And then we sell the thing, you know, for $6.99. And then we can discount it down, you know, to $5.99. And we have what's known in there as a keystone markup. That is, we buy it for a dollar and sell it for two. And in the trade, we call that the 2% principle. 2%. My wife was talking to a Jew one time. This Jewish guy called up, and he's chit-chatting a little bit, and he's asking about our business school. And my wife was telling him about the business school. And she said to him, one of the fundamental basics, or one of the fundamental basic principles of the business school here at the Gordon Law School is called the 2% principle. And he said, the 2% principle? And my wife said, yeah. Yeah, what you do is you buy it for a dollar and you sell it for two. And you make that 2% markup. And this Jewish fellow just went ballistic. She said, "Oh no, 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 Mrs. Gordon, that's a 100% markup. That's a 50% profit." Well, my wife's no dummy, and she said, "Well, whatever you want to call it, you go ahead. But we just buy it for a dollar and sell it for two, and we seem to get by pretty nicely on that 2% profit." So tuck that one away in your heart. Now, the drug companies—they're not satisfied with that 2% profit. They make 4, 8, and 12% profit. I mean, they mark it up. I told you last program about this AIDS thing. President Clinton got the AIDS medication for his foundation that they're distributing in China for $2,000 a year per patient, and it costs $100,000 here in the United States. Now, I don't know what percentage you want to hang on that, boys and girls, but it's more than 2%. Ain't it? Well, this Dr. Marcia Engel, A-N-G-E-L-L, and I guess it's Engel, M.D., she's a medical doctor, and she's the former New England Journal of Medicine editor. I mean, this woman is right in there, you know, rubbing elbows with all the bigwigs and hobnobbing with all the gobbledygooks at the FDA and the medical associations and pharmaceutical outfits. Well, she wrote a book. She says a political tidal wave is building, which will forever change both the industry and many of its infamous business practices. It's sad to note that the drug industry today is equally poorly regulated as the tobacco companies, and this is a testament not only to the short-sighted foolishness of their management, but also to the fact that they can fool some of the customers some of the time, but I don't think they can fool all of them all of the time. Medical Journal changes policy of finding independent doctors to write. She also pointed out that the New England Journal of Medicine will announce that it has given up finding truly independent doctors to write and review articles and editorials for it because as a result of the financial ties these physicians have with so many drug companies in the United States. So the journal says the drug company's reach is just too deep. In the year 2000, the drug industry sponsored more than 314,000 events for physicians, everything from luncheons to getaway weekends, at a cost of $2 billion. On top of that, many doctors accept speaking and consulting fees that link them to drug companies. Now the journal will allow these critical evaluations to be written by people with financial ties to the drug industry. Well, boy, you could just bet that those are going to be real unbiased articles, aren't they? Oh, for God's sake, give me a break. I'm almost ready to puke. That's why it's time for us to take our mid-program break here and remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, business law, courtroom strategy and procedure, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that's open to individuals by prearrangement, and the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. Children need not apply. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archive. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. For your listening convenience, just go to our webpage, georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, economics, history, health, news, and current events 7 days a week. And the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are going to reciprocate. They may or may not. Most of the authors and publications that we use or cite on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, let me give you a last address here. This is a 36-page report filled with all kinds of behind-the-scenes whistleblowers and books, tapes, etc., so that you can inform yourself on some of these medical issues, like vaccines and vaccinations. I'm going to tell you a little story over here. I'll give you the address first. www.shirleys-wellness-cafe.com. shirleycafe.com. Shirley's wellnesscafe.com, 36-page story, 36 pages of material, I guess I should say. And just filled with all kinds of books and tapes and all kinds of information that not just useful, but I would say necessary and imperative. Necessary and imperative. If you've been going to medical doctors and hospitals and getting shots and vaccines and one thing and another, it'll kill you. If they don't get you this year, they'll get you next. If you keep taking those flu vaccines, you'll die from Alzheimer's. Now, I said I was going to tell you a little story over here. Years ago, there was a nurse, and she was the school nurse up at some private school. I forgot the name of it now, but I was sending my boy Ted. He's about 5 or 6 years old. He was either in kindergarten or he was in the first grade. This is back in the early 70s, and I got this note, came home one day and said, well, we're going to vaccinate all of the little children next Wednesday. Just sign right here and we'll vaccinate little Teddy. So I took a look at that form. I went in and I called the school nurse on the phone. And I said, now, I got the note, little Teddy brought it home from school. And she says, oh, good, good. And I said, I sat down, I read it. And I'm sitting right here now at the phone, and I've got it in my hand. And I said, now I want to tell you, eyeball to eyeball, that I don't want you to shoot my kid up next week at that vaccination ceremony. And if there's going to be any problem, if there's any possibility that there could be a mistake, and that you're going to accidentally vaccinate my boy Ted, you may rest assured that litigation is going to follow. And if that's going to cause a problem, I'll keep him home next Wednesday so that no mistakes, no accidents can occur. She was horrified. And she started in on me and she preached me a sermon. I mean, it was like a couple of evangelists rolled up into this one tornado nurse, and she just told me about how the human race had been saved by vaccines. Now, she's got a good point. You got to admit now that 88% of people believe in vaccines and only 12% of us are uninformed, stupid, nonsensical, uninformed, bestial savages, and don't believe in vaccines and vaccinations. It's just a small minority of us nitwits on the lunatic fringe that don't believe in vaccination. Well, I don't think that the people that don't believe in vaccination are totally uninformed. In fact, I'd read quite a few books on vaccines and vaccinations before I came to the conclusion that I didn't want it from my boy Ted. Now, I was raised in an era, remember back in the 1930s and 40s, when they were only giving you one vaccine, one vaccination. And I didn't get it. My old granny, I was raised by my granny, and my old granny figured that if God had intended for little children to be vaccinated, he would have created them with a needle sticking out of their arm so that they could just hook up the hypodermic needle, or I mean the syringe to the needle that was already growing in your arm, and they could just pump you full of whatever it is that they're pumping you full of. So my old granny, an old-timey lady born in 1882, figured that little kids probably didn't need those vaccines, and so she didn't subject me to those vaccines. And so I grew up vaccine-free. Just crazy, crazy concepts. Well, anyway, I grew a little bit past that, see, because I went to public school and they told us about how these vaccines had saved the world. And if it weren't for vaccines, we'd all have polio and we'd all be dead. And so I kind of questioned my granny. I thought, well, maybe my granny, you know, is a nice old lady, but, you know, she's just dumb as a box of rocks. So I picked up a couple of books on vaccines and vaccinations and kind of verified my granny's thinking. And I came to the conclusions that vaccines were bad, wicked, terrible, awful, and evil, and I didn't want them, and I didn't want them for my children. So, that being the case, I I told this nurse over here, I said, now don't you vaccinate my kid. Well, when she got through with her sermon, took her about 15 minutes, I thanked her. I said, now, lady, thank you. Thank you. I'm really appreciative of the fact that you took your time, your valuable time, to tell me about all of these wonders of vaccines and about how they've saved the world and humanity. And on and on it went. And I said, now, let's get down to the nitty-gritty now where the rubber meets the road. If there's going to be a problem next Wednesday and an accident occurs, there's going to be litigation. There's going to be hard feelings. There's going to be weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth, and we don't want that. You want me to keep him home or send him? And she practically said to me, you must hate your child because you're not going to have him vaccinated. Well, I could understand that. She's been to medical school. She's got a degree after her name. Hell, I'm a high school dropout. What do I know? Dummy? And so, you know, when you're talking to somebody that's got letters after their names, you know, you got to listen because they've obviously been to school and they're real smart people. But oftentimes their evangelistic zeal gets ahead of their common sense. And so I asked this lady, I said, well, let me ask you a question here. Maybe I don't understand all this, but how many of the children up there at the school aren't going to be vaccinated? And she said, well, they're all going to be vaccinated. I said, all except little Teddy. And she said, that's right. You know, if you don't have your boy vaccinated, well, he's going to be the only one that's not vaccinated, the only one that's not protected from these diseases. So I said, well, if a child is vaccinated, does it protect them from these diseases? And if somebody were to come around and they were loaded up with measles and pertussis and mumps and whoop and cough and polio and started coughing up a storm and sneezing all over the room, that the vaccinated kid, he wouldn't get this disease or sickness, but the unvaccinated kid would. And she says, that's right. That's right. That's what will happen. And I said, now, let me ask you another question over here. Let's suppose that this kid is vaccinated, and he's coughing and wheezing and whining, and he's sneezing all over the room and just spreading germs everywhere, but he can't give that disease to anybody else because he doesn't have it because he's protected, right? And she said, that's right. He can't get it, and he can't spread it. And I said, okay, well, so far, so good. I said, so the only kid that you know of that hasn't been vaccinated yet or isn't going to get vaccinated is little Teddy. And she said, that's right. And so the other 39 kids in that class, assuming that my boy Ted is the only one there that isn't vaccinated, then all the rest of the kids, if my kid comes in there unvaccinated, sneezing and hooping and hollering and coughing and spreading disease germs everywhere, the other 39 kids, they can't get any disease from little Teddy because they've all been vaccinated. They're all protected. Is that correct? And she said, yeah, that's right. That's right. I said, okay. I said, now my boy Ted isn't going to be the only one there who isn't vaccinated, and the other 39 little kids, they're all vaccinated and they're all protected, and all 39 of them are hooping and hollering and they're coughing and sneezing all over the classroom, but they can't give any disease to my little boy Ted, now can they, because they've all been vaccinated. And she said, yeah, that's right. I said, well, then we've got the best of both worlds, you see. All the other little kids are going to be vaccinated, and they can't give any disease to my boy Ted. My boy Ted will be the only one that's unvaccinated. He can't give any disease to the other 39, so why do we need to vaccinate little Teddy? And there was a long, pregnant pause. And I've noticed over the years that whenever you react to, or whenever you tell people, or you respond with common sense, there's a long pregnant pause on the other end of the line. So I'll just rest my case right there, and we'll take a look at another article over here called The Adverse Side Effects from Medication, which are very common. You know, a lot of times people will submit to taking drugs because they've got a problem. You know, it's like kind of like insulin. You know, you got diabetes, so we got to have insulin. As if insulin were a cure to diabetes. But you want to keep in mind that people that take insulin for their diabetes aren't cured of the diabetes. They got to take that insulin again tomorrow and the day after tomorrow, the next week and next month and next year for the rest of their lives. They never get to a point where their pancreas ever produces insulin. They never get to a point where they're ever cured. They never get a cure. They get a treatment. Well, if you want to live the rest of your life as an invalid dependent upon insulin, that's your choice in life. I certainly wouldn't want to second guess your choice, but I wouldn't want to live like that. So I would want to cure that, and there are a number of cures for insulin dependence, commonly called diabetes. There's a better solution to that is don't get diabetes. I think if I were you, I would avoid diabetes like AIDS, herpes, and VD. And I want to pass along a little something here too. Just a little blurb I picked up here in my travels. The blurb is this: that the incidence of diabetes has doubled in the last 20 years. Doubled. Twice as many people have diabetes today as 20 years ago. So go back to 1985. And there was half as many people in America with diabetes as there is today. Now, between 1985 and 2005, the production and consumption of soda pop in this country also doubled. Now, that's not to say that Coca-Cola causes diabetes. But I think I could be on pretty safe ground if I said Coca-Cola does not cure diabetes either. At least, so far, the medical establishment hasn't come along and said, hey, listen, you got diabetes, we got a cure, it's called Coke in a can. I haven't heard that yet. If you have, send it along to me. So, from an old country boy's point of view, you know, I look at that and I say, well, gosh, if the incidence of diabetes doubled over the last 20 years, and the consumption of soda pop doubled over the last 20 years, it may just be a coincidence. But I would be willing to put some money down on the table and bet that if we could double the consumption of soda pop between the year 2005 and 2025, if we could double the production and consumption of soda pop, I'll bet you we could double the incidence of diabetes. And so I'd like to suggest that all you people get right after it. If diabetes is what you want, I would suggest more soda pop. Instead of a big gulp, you need a super big gulp. I was watching a movie here the other day, and I tell you this little story. It's called Super Size Me. Super Size Me. It's some kind of a movie. It's a documentary put out by a guy that ate nothing but McDonald's for 30 days and impaired his health in the process. It's quite a little story. That's not the point I'm trying to make, but he had a little segment in there, and he said, you know, about 40 years ago, and I can remember this now, when you bought a Coca-Cola, when I was a kid, a Coca-Cola was 6 ounces. It was in a bottle, and you got a 6-ounce bottle of Coca-Cola. And when I was a kid, Coca-Cola was a real treat. Maybe once a month, you know, there would be some Coca-Cola that was left over from a party or something like that, and it was all stale, and I could go in and I could pour it out of the bottom of a bottle and get a little taste of Coke or 7-Up or something on that order, you know, Squirt or something. And it was quite a little treat. Well, I noticed that when they doubled the price from a nickel to a dime, they doubled the size of the Coke from 6 ounces to 12. And they also put it in cans, and so now they gave you cans of Coke, and there was 12 ounces in there. And then I discovered that there was a teaspoon, or just about a teaspoon, of sugar for every ounce in that Coke bottle. So, you know, it isn't quite syrup, but it's getting close to syrup. And by the time you put that Coca-Cola down, you know, you've just consumed about 9 to 12 teaspoons of sugar, and your body can only digest 3 teaspoons of sugar per day. And that's in a 24-hour period, 3 teaspoons. I'm just giving you the numbers here, boys and girls. I don't make these laws. I don't make these rules. Just a reporter giving you the numbers. Well, my common sense said that if you drank one soda pop a day, you couldn't digest the sugar that's in there. Now, we also have Oreo cookies to go with the Coca-Cola, you know, and they've got a little sugar in them. And then we've got all this other food, and it's all got sugar in it. And so you start adding up all this sugar over here. I don't think we should be too surprised about the incidence of diabetes in America, diabetes here in this country. And I think I would want to avoid diabetes like AIDS, herpes, and VD. So I'm just going to pass this along to you. Just think about it. You know, if you'd stop eating sugar, you probably would never get diabetes. It's a wild new concept. No sugar, no diabetes. You double the soda pop consumption, you double diabetes. I'll bet you if you cut the soda pop consumption in half, you'd probably cut the diabetes rate in half. I bet you if you cut the sugar out altogether, you'd probably eliminate it. Do you suppose diabetes is called sugar disease? You know, cancer is called cooked food disease. I wonder if diabetes should be called sugar disease. Here's the side effects from medication that can be more common than believed in a study of more than 600 adults. One of four experienced a potentially harmful side effect from a medication prescribed by a primary care physician. Did you hear that? Let me repeat this to you again. You know, this might have gone right over your head here, son, but side effects from medication may be more common than you believed. Side effects from medications could be a little more common than you thought about. In a study of more than 600 adults, 1 in 4, that's 25%, 1 in 4, suffered side effects from the drug that was prescribed by your physician. Hell, I've never heard of anybody that's on heroin, cocaine, or pot complaining about side effects. Everybody tells me that cocaine's the greatest thing since sliced white bread. Pot's great. Heroin's divine. Nobody ever complains about side effects from illegal drugs, but 25% of people who are on legal, authorized drugs, I would suggest that these big corporations, you know, companies like Merck and Pfizer, you know, you guys should go down and talk to the Medellin cartel down in Colombia and see if you can't straighten out your drugs and make them a little more palatable so that they don't harm so many people. Maybe you could learn a thing or two. Hell, you might even make your drugs designer affiliated. I mean, hell, you might make your drugs really popular if you could get rid of those side effects. Yeah, if you want to have a real shocker, next time you're in the grocery store, pick up a Reader's Digest. Cost you a couple bucks. Take it home. Now, here on my desk, I have my 10 power loop glasses. I slip it on over my head. And they're 10 power. Now, what you do is you open up the Reader's Digest, and you get over to your first drug. It'll be Nexium or something like that. And then you turn the page, you know, the front page there. It's got this smiling lady, and she's just happy as a clam at high tide. Okay, because she's taking Nexium. I think she'd be happier taking heroin. But anyway, she's pretty happy with Nexium or whatever they're selling. And then you flip the page over, and there's two full pages of fine print. You can't read that without a 10-power loop. I don't wear glasses. I got 20/20 vision. I can't read it. So I slip on my 10-power loop, and then you look down here, and you'll find a heading over here that says Adverse Reactions. Read that, and then ask yourself, would any sane human being, hell, an insane monkey, if he could read and understand the side effects that this drug company is telling you in fine print, because obviously they don't want you to read that. I mean, you know, you turn the page back, and where the ad is, you know, with all the bright colors, I mean, they got great big print. Hell, you could be a blind man, and you could read that. But when you turn the page, it's all in fine print. Now, you read those side effects over there. You know, it causes nausea and vomiting and gastroenteritis and diarrhea and it can stop your heart and blah, blah, blah. And if you're pregnant, don't touch this stuff with a 10-foot pole. Causes birth defects. And my God, on and on it goes. And they tell you in plain language, you know, here's what it does. Well, that's what that druggist told me. He said, hell, these are poisons. You learn that right there in medical school coming right out of the chute. And these poisons over here have to be taken pretty carefully. I don't know what the hell heroin and cocaine and marijuana are. Nobody ever complains about them. Now, some people kill themselves with these drug overdoses, kill 6,000 people a year. Those that take legal drugs kills 106,000 a year. Now, if we were real concerned about the number of people being killed, I think that we should outlaw all of the legal drugs and all of the pharmaceutical companies, and the only drugs that we'll allow into the country are the illegal drugs. I think we ought to legalize the illegal drugs and outlaw the legal drugs, because we could cut the death toll by 100,000 a year if we did that. 100,000 a year. If that's your goal in life. Of the adverse drug events, 13% were serious. Lead study author T.Hal K. Gandhi, M.D., must be a Swede, of the Division of General Medicine at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston. He told the Life Extension magazine about 1 in 10 could have been completely prevented, and another third could have been ameliorated, made less serious, had they been addressed more quickly. For their research, which was published in the April 2003 New England Journal of Medicine, Dr. Gandhi and his associates interviewed 661 patients 10 to 14 days after a visit to the doctor to one of four primary healthcare practices in Boston. They questioned the patients about specific symptoms of potential medication side effects, if symptoms were present, and they found that 25%, 1 in 4, was suffering from side effects. So you're not feeling good, and you go to the doctor, he gives you a drug that makes you sicker than what you were when you came in. That's why I keep telling you people, I think Americans are suffering from terminal national insanity. Not only with our economics and our politics and our wars, but with our medical practice, for crying out loud. I mean, you just take a look at what Americans are doing to themselves and what we're doing in our politics, what we do in our wars, what we're doing here in our economics, and now what we're doing in our medicine, and you say, this is sane? I don't know. This old country boy doesn't see it that way. Looks to me like these guys have lost a couple of marbles. These aren't the sharpest marbles in the drawer. Not the sharpest marbles. The adverse side effects of medication are common. You can get that from www.chiro.org. C-H-I-R-O. I don't know if that's Cairo. I guess it is. www.chiro.org, and I'll tell you the story here about adverse side effects from medication. I'm about out of time again. God, you just run out of time when you're having fun. Let me remind you here in closing that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. If you'd like more information about us, you can go to our webpage, georgegordon.org, and we'd be happy to tell you more. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, just go to that same website, the homeschooling page. I'll tell you a little more about that. And the Law Hour website is updated every week. And it has our radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through the webpage at georgegordon.org. Time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.